listen up or run for cover. Dropping knowledge from the people who have it to the people who need it. The real Robin Bradley Bums is dropping.
What it is, Brad Lee back again with another episode of Dropping Bombs today in the studio, folks. As always, I've got a real treat for you. This time, it's even like one of the best probably treats you'll ever get. Cindy Eckert is in the house. What's up, Cindy?
Woo, Brad, I'm ready.
Now, folks, if you don't know Cindy Eckert, you're about to. Number one, you know, one of my goals in life, Cindy, is to exit for a billion. Or at least build it to a billion, because I think the billion's the new million. Like, you know, Everybody can be a millionaire and even almost multi now. So billion is the new million. Cindy Eckert, she's got the B title. She built and sold a pharmaceutical company that was responsible for female Viagra, basically. She's an entrepreneur, author, speaker. She runs around showing a lot of people, but she's still a businesswoman. So I said, get on the show. Where did we meet? Clubhouse?
We did.
Yeah. And I said,
Sonia Hatter introduced us.
Yeah. And I'm
boy,
like,
did
and
we
I'm
have
like,
fun in that room.
Oh yeah. I love Sonia Hatter. And I said, you got to do my podcast. So I'm so happy that you're here. And I'm sure the listeners will be elated by the time we're done. My first question for you though, is why female Viagra? Did you have researchers or did you say, hey, we got to help women that have a low sex drive?
Okay. So here's the story. So I built my very first company, had one of the male sexual health drugs. So we're going to have fun for all your listeners today. But I built one of those companies, and get this, there were 26 FDA approved drugs for some kind of male sexual dysfunction and not a single one for women. Ridiculous, because we know by the data that actually more women have issues in the bedroom than men, but there were no solutions. I think over the course of my life and my career, if everybody's running away from something, that's my signal to run toward it. And that's why I decided to go on this crazy ride to create the first ever for women.
Okay. Now, you said women have more, because to me, you would think if you just fix the man's problem, the women don't have problems. Why? Well, because nothing has to work, really. But you said women have more problems.
Yeah, actually the prevalence is higher for women for different forms of sexual dysfunction. The most common is low libido. So I have no drive and I'm frustrated by it. I probably once had drive and I was happy with it, but something changed.
Wouldn't that be caused by your partner?
Oh, I mean, sure, if your partner's a complete asshole, a pill will never fix it. But actually, what we know scientifically is there's a brain chemistry dynamic in this. So you made a good point. Men, it's mechanical, right? It's blood flow. Women, it's brain flow. We actually get turned on in the brain. And for a huge percentage of women, something goes off balance. So you're smiling off balance at some point over the course of their lifetime. Nothing's a panacea. It has risks. It had benefits. I need to say that to everybody for like true expectation setting. But yeah, you can't imagine. So I was on stage. I was in San Francisco. Maybe it was in 2019. And I got off stage and a woman came like running for me. Like she was running across the room to stop me as I was walking to the back. And she said, hey, I need to tell you something. I need to tell you a story. I said, great. She goes, I was literally with divorce lawyers. She's like, my husband and I, everything had fallen apart. It fell apart in the bedroom, fell apart across the breakfast table. That happens, right? Once you're not having sex, everything tends to be amplified, resentments, et cetera. And she said, I heard you on a podcast. And I thought to myself, wait a minute, what if this is it? And she went to her doctor the next day. She got on our product, Addy, and she said, can I take a picture with you and show my husband because we're still together? That's awesome. The truth is, like, that's why I did this in the first place. I tell great sex jokes. You know, I've been in this field for a long time. We often trivialize it. It's funny. But the reality is, you know what? If something's going wrong for people, it hugely affects the quality of their life and their relationships. And the fact that we were ignoring giving women a single option was ridiculous to me.
Have you done a lot of studies on sex?
Yes. So we studied this product in 13,000 women. Let me give you context. The average drug approved in the US is a little less than 1,000 patients typically in clinical trials. We studied it in 13,000 women.
So you gave them the pill and then asked them, you want a hump? Are you feeling feeling aroused?
So let me tell you how it works. So these are, like, I'll be a geek for a second, double-blinded, placebo-controlled trials. They don't know if they're on the drug or they're on placebo. And what you're measuring are a few things. One, do they have more, like, interest in having sex, which they can report, right? I'm thinking about, I'm fantasizing again. I can't remember the last time I fantasized. I'm initiating, whatever that may be. Are they having more satisfying sex? So the downstream effect, are you having more sex, period? And then actually importantly, are they less like distressed about it? Because it really does cause a lot of, you know, personal angst when this is going on. So we had to measure all of that scientifically and with statistical significance. This product made all of those outcomes.
More interest. I focus on that because there's people listening where their girls aren't interested. And they take it personally. So what do? They start freaking roaming. They start cheating. They start saying, well, if I'm not going to get it from you, I'm going to get it from someone else. And that's, I would think, a lot of the reason people cheat in relationships. Now, if that person that cheated realized it's the disinterest isn't because of you, it's not a lack of interest in you, it's a issue, like a real actual medical issue. Would that be the truth?
Yeah. Listen, for a huge percentage of women, a third of women say that they have lack of interest in having sex.
Yeah. But did you ask a lack of interest with the same person?
Oh, for sure. Listen, you have to say it's not because they're on a different medication. It's not because there's relationship issues. I'm talking about this profile or women who are like, I love my partner. I love them. I literally never think about it anymore. Or if they approach, so I'm like, oh, do I have to tonight? Or it's this idea, going to bed early, right? Yeah. Sneaking in before their partner comes because they don't want to do the deed.
Ooh, now see, again, I would rather my wife just approach me and say, you know, don't want to do it, rather than go fake sleeping. So because anytime I think a girl makes a dude feel like, you know, hurry up, get it over with, or any of that. Yeah. Like as soon as they make it a chore, well, now the man needs Viagra.
Well, look, the psychological impact for all of us is huge here. So I'm going to give a lot of relief to all your guys who are listening to this. It's not you. It's neurochemistry. And I think actually when you realize that, we're all egomaniacs when it comes to sex, right? In a relationship with somebody else, you want to be wanted. And if something goes off there, you're taking it really personally. And to your point, you might stray or you might be seeking that out from somebody else, because we've never considered that it's not about us, that it's something happening for them. Can I tell you another story, Brad? I was in, I gave a talk. I was in DC and I was in the JW Marriott in DC. I went to the Starbucks right after I spoke. And this guy is standing behind me in line and he taps me on the shoulder. And he's like, hey, I think the work you're doing is really cool. I was like, that is so nice. Then I thought to myself, how the hell does he know what the work is that I'm doing? And he said, I was the AV guy in the meeting where you just gave the talk. And I said, oh, that's so cool. And then he held my arm for just a second. And he was like, I just got divorced. And I looked at him and I was like, I'm so sorry to hear that. And he, like, his eyes kind of teared up and he said, yeah, but I think this is what it was. And I never considered it wasn't about me. And so really, we all need to understand that things can happen, right? Biologically, physiologically, and we need to help each other understand that that's a possibility if something's going wrong and you deserve to treat, you know, seek some treatment for it.
Yeah, folks, before I forget, make sure you like do the little thumb on the iPhone and swipe over and open up like Instagram and follow her at Cindy Pink, CEO, Cindy Pink. Why Cindy Pink?
You know what? The pill is pink. I love pink. I'm wearing pink right now. And pink for me is symbolic. I'll tell you, as I was going through this, Brad, you cannot imagine how many rooms I was laughed out of. Like really? All the traditional, oh my God, the traditional like VCs were like, lady in pink, pink pill, get out of here. Like never going to happen. The big companies haven't done it. You're never going to do it. And there was something about standing in my pink that was the shift from underestimated to unapologetic. I love pink. I've worn it my whole life. And I completely reject the notion that femininity is a weakness in business. I think it's a huge strength.
I would agree. I tell people all the time, I think women have an advantage, if you ask me. They have the...
We don't feel that way by the numbers, I'll tell you. So it, can you imagine that literally 2% of all venture funding goes to female founders? And yet 40% of entrepreneurs are women. Like how in the hell do we think that, you know, half the population has 2% of the good ideas? So it... There is a, you know, there is a little bit of an extra hurdle there when you're like, out there even trying to raise money.
Yeah, but like, you know, I'm picturing myself in a room full of stuffy old men. Oh boy, yeah. Network. I'm part of it. I'm there, you know, because that shit does exist. And if you're on the inside, it doesn't mean you agree with all the old stuffy bastards. Yeah. But there is an old boy network and there is that mentality. But I'm not in it. I'm going to picture myself in it for now. If you walked in, pink and all, and you left with that idea, even if we were cutting jokes like freaking, you know, after you left, we were cutting jokes about, you know, locker room talk, as Trump likes to call it.
Sure.
Even if we were doing that, I would be like, guys, let's back her. Like that shit right there is going to be massively, massively popular. Because how many women out there want to be a little bit more, I don't want to say horny, but libidoed.
Turned on. Yeah, turned on. Well, that's why you're who you are, Brad. That you would be like, that is a $1 billion idea.
Easy.
But you know what? Sometimes those things are not so obvious to people who are old school thinkers.
You got any
and
more?
There is a guy who was so important to me. He's a huge banker in healthcare. And I got to tell you, if that guy had written me a check, like it would have been like the stamp of approval. And he was particularly rough on me when I went in to pitch him. But listen, that said, whatever, it wasn't personal, right? He had these unconscious little themes going through his mind when he was listening to me. Fast forward, to last year, he's sitting in my office. He's in a hot pink chair in my boardroom. And he says, hey, Cindy, let me show you something. And he lifts up his pant leg to show me hot pink socks he's wearing. And you know what? Like that was his moment to be like, I got it. And now we co-invest in deals together. And you know, the kind of takeaway I would say for everyone who's listening to you, I don't care if you're a woman, you're a guy, whatever. At some point you've felt underestimated, a little overlooked, dismissed, whatever it may be in a room, here's my tip. Never walk away malicious. Walk away ambitious. It's not personal. It's not about you. But boy, is it great to prove them wrong. And not in a way that like makes them pay for it, but in a way that invites them to the table to have changed their mind and do something with you in the future.
I like that. Never walk away malicious. Walk away ambitious. So you're always, let me see how I'm following you on Instagram, aren't I? I guarantee I am.
You better be. Let's see right now.
When people ask me to be on something, I always see if they're following me. Cause if they're not following me, the answer is no.
That seems fair.
Yep.
There's a good lesson in that for everybody.
Well, yeah. Like don't tell me you want me on your show if you're not following me. That just tells me that you're trying to ultimately get my people to know you rather than the opposite.
For sure.
Get my people to know you if they don't already. You got a bunch of followers.
I'm trying to get my pink army to know you, Brad.
You guys got a bunch of followers, but you better go to Instagram. It is pink and you've got a bunch already. She's got a blue check mark. You can't miss her. And I'll tell you right now, yes, I do follow you. I love the fact that you're a billionaire. Well, maybe not a billionaire, because I've always wondered, when people sell for a billion, doesn't mean they net out at $1 billion. But my goal is to be evaluated at $1 billion. How did that feel when you like did it? Did you like freak out? Number one, are you married?
No, I'm not. I'm not married. I'm engaged.
Okay, so you're about to be married.
What was that face for a second? You were like looking around like, what?
Well, yeah, because like I'm just curious what a pretty, because you're pretty, what a pretty billionaire experiences every single day traveling around the world. Like, wouldn't every dude on the planet be lucky to get a billionaire?
Okay, can I tell you a joke? You have to take it the right way because it sounds terrible, but I think it's funny. So always, like on planes, when I was going through this, I'm sitting next to a guy, we're in conversation, and I would never tell him what I did right away. Like, what do you do? Healthcare? What kind of healthcare? Women's health? Like, it would take a little bit. And finally, we'd get to, was it a product that maybe I've heard of? And I would say, it's female Viagra. Almost to a person, they would say, female Viagra? I'm female Viagra. And I would turn and I would say, if I had a nickel for every guy who told me that, I wouldn't have had to sell my company for $1 billion. And they would either laugh or be totally shut down. But it was crazy going through this. I was single. So it gets a certain reaction. I have two big brothers. I think they're not sure what to think about it. It was to get to that moment was surreal. It really was. And I think it took me a long time to even process it.
How many dudes hit on you every single day that knew who you were? And do you feel like that's part of the deal now? Like, if I just came out and I sold Lightspeed and all of a sudden Brad Lee sold Lightspeed for $1.5 billion.
Yeah.
It's, if I were single, I don't think I'd be able to help thinking that, man, you just like me because I got $1 billion.
Oh, listen, you know what? Here's the truth. For anybody who's been through an exit or the number of zeros in your bank account has changed, here's the truth. You wake up the next morning, you're the same person. You're just the same person. And, you know, I woke up the day after I sold the company for $1 billion. And guess what I did? I went to work because that's what I love how to do. What you start to realize is sometimes it's not the same people around you. And there's a great expression that my fiance's grandfather used to say, which is, when you walk towards somebody, don't go with your hands up, go with your hands down. And I think you find now many more people come with their hands up. And it's just navigating that a little bit differently in terms of understanding, like, is there something that they want here? Or is it really truly just, a friendship? So that's been an interesting thing to navigate. Yeah.
Well, I always teach.
Is that the first one I got? God, I'm going to get my game going. Let's do this.
Well, you're not listening. You're not listening. You must be on too much Addy right now. you've already got like four or five of them.
That and iced tea.
It's going
through the vein.
Knowing full well that, you killed that game.
Yeah.
What the audience doesn't know is that you sold it out, or you sold out for over a bill or whatever it was. Yeah. And then you got it back.
Cash up front.
It was cash. Shut up. Really? Know, all of it?
You know, cash.
Did you ever call your bank and play it for somebody? You have.
No. I have a very weird relationship with money. We have to talk about that.
Did you ever screenshot it?
Oh yeah, for sure. Like, I'm from upstate New York. I'm from Rochester, New York. And by the way, I'm not from like the fancy neighborhood. I'm from the other side of the tracks, like very blue collar background. Like, I have more zeros in my bank account than any kid from upstate New York should ever have. So it's been an interesting adjustment to that, to try to figure it out. But the cool piece is you have this extraordinary, money is just a conduit for good or bad. You pick. And, I've just seen it as this incredible tool now to do more good in this world. And that's been pretty, pretty awesome. So I don't tend to buy, I like cars, but outside of that, I don't buy a lot of fancy things. I think the fun now is betting on other people.
Mm. And you help specifically women, obviously. You believe in empowering women. I know that you made the comment that very few women ever get a chance because the old boy network. So you're out there turning that around.
I am. When I broke through with this product in 2015, there wasn't even a category called femtech. Like, what's femtech? It's women's health technologies, power in women's hands. And it was coined in 2016. the year after I broke through, and it's going to be a $50 billion category by 2025. You know what? Me betting on women where other people aren't looking, that's just good business. When I started doing it, people are like, oh, that's so nice. Is that charity? I'm like, no, it's capitalism. I am going and finding opportunities that you are missing out on. And I'm going to change your mind about who has the next $1 billion idea. I have great guys I bet on too. I should say that, but they have to be doing work for women. So I have guys that run incredible women's healthcare companies that are also part of the incubator.
I was going to say, you know, if I can ever help, I don't care if it's a man or a woman, just FYI.
Yeah.
Like I will help women, especially I like working with women better. Is that discrimination?
Probably. What year is it? 2021? Yes.
Well,
right.
They just, to me, it's like, look, if you got a good idea, I'm interested, man or woman. I'm just looking to get the next Addy out on the world. And by the way, if you guys are thinking already, man, where is this product? Because again, I tell you, I've never heard of it, but I'm going to go home and tell my wife about it just because, hey, after 10 years of marriage, I don't know that she even wants to. Maybe she's just being a good wife. I mean, I would feel bad if she said, Brad, I don't want to half the time.
Yeah.
Like I would rather her want to.
Right. Of course.
Matter of fact, I almost need to know that she wants to, because like I said, as soon as I think she doesn't want to, or it's a chore, well, now I need Viagra.
Right. Sure. I get it.
Yeah. Because like, this ain't a job. This ain't something you have to do. I'd be like, and that's probably why it causes so many problems in relationships, because men's egos get crushed.
The non-scientific term is mercy sex. And let me tell you what's going on, the phenomenon. So here's what all of us can know about sex. We are all very animalistic in terms of our wiring. We are biologically wired to want sex, men and women alike. So for women who have this issue, we really like almost close, I describe it as shutting all the tabs in our brain to respond to sexual cues. We got to quiet everything. We got to put everything else away to enjoy sex. Women who have this are often very type A. They're like, you know, information processing part of their brain is like always firing on all cylinders. And these are the women that lie in bed and they're doing their to-do list. They're worried about what's happening for the kids tomorrow. And it's really that their brain can't quiet. And over time, that's what causes this phenomenon. So what set me on this path is we know this from brain scan imaging. So I was sitting there looking at great science and yet no one chasing the commercial opportunity. You know, we were talking about the company sale and I was, you know, the perceived $1 billion happy ending. Forgive the pun, for an entrepreneur. I'm going to sell it. They're going to march it across the globe. They never launched it. Can you imagine? I had fought so hard for women to finally have a choice, and then they put it on the shelf. And that is what prompted me to go back to them and say, man, give it back. And they too laughed me out of the room the first time I said it. They're like, we just paid you $1 billion in cash up front. But I had a back end. It was a $2.5 billion transaction, and they had really specific performance obligations and they weren't meeting them. Simple things like go out and educate OBGYNs, market it. And when they weren't doing it, it gave me leverage. So I actually got it back and we kept the billion.
Dude, that's ridiculous.
So it's been quite a ride.
Man, I just can't wait till I get to that level, Cindy. It's because I'm wired a little bit different than most. I want all that money or at least resources so I can do exactly what you're doing. I want to help. I mean, once I'm there, because again, yes, I do love the nice shit. So once my cup overfloweth, I will fill up other people's cup rather than going to get another cup. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Most people just go get another cup.
Right.
Like, dude, if your shit's full and brimming over the top, man, just fill up others. That's what I'm excited about. So your culture and you know a lot about culture too. So how important do you think if someone's building a business is culture?
The most important.
See, I used to think that that was just corporate-y hocus pocus bullshit. And I never understood how valuable it is. Talk a little bit about culture. Yeah. What did you do to make your culture so magnetic?
It's, you know what? I'll make it really simple. I made everyone owners. Everyone. I don't care if you pack the boxes, you lead the sales team, you have skin in the game. And if you do that, if you make sure that your success is going to be a collective success, people make decisions very differently. They go to work earlier, they leave later, they treat how we're spending like it's coming out of their own pocketbook. Because guess what it is?
You gave them a piece?
Everyone. Anyone who's ever come and worked for me, I've given a piece of the company.
Well, what happened? So what if I applied, got the job, and then quit a week later? Did I have to be there a certain amount of time?
It vests over time. But yeah, I mean, there are people who have been with me and they had, you know, certain part of their options were already in. And you know what? Their contribution was worth it at that time. I'm of the belief, always reward people around you. Like, success is not a solo sport. You know, you did not get there alone. And therefore, those people ripped the sheets off in the morning and went to work for me and put it all in. And even if they did that only for a couple of years, I'm still indebted to them for that. You guys are let the sheets off. I have too many bedroom references.
You said let the rip the sheets off. And then you said put it all in. But that's beside the point.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. But see, I don't know. I've been in this world for a long time. I actually am a card carrying member of the Sexual Medicine Society. You didn't know there was even one of those, but I am very popular at cocktail parties.
Yeah. That's because you're cool and you seem real.
That's, you know, culture, Brad. When I started, so I think about my own path. I was in big corporate for a long time. And then I went smaller. I chased innovation, learning from people who were entrepreneurs till I got to the point where I'm like, okay, I can do this. And what I thought, my first hypothesis, my first company was called Slate. Truly like clean slate, doing it on my own terms, going to make my own messes. I'll clean them up. And my thought was, look, I've performed in all of these environments, but I've been completely uninspired. So what if I could find other people like me, put us all together, put us against a mission, give us all a piece of it. How would we perform? Like a rocket ship. And that was it. My want was to be an owner. So why wouldn't I bestow that on everybody else who came too? And I think culturally, really, I've always, there are six choices you have to make to come work for me. And they're really the pillars of our culture. And I hire against them. I fire against them. I incentivize with them. I think it's the most successful organizations have very clear cultures.
How do you send me your plan?
Oh, I'll send it to you. Yeah. There are six choices. I'll tell you my best interview questions even around them.
Well, I want the structure, how to give away a piece. Cause again, I mean, there's only so much to give away. So maybe you you tell me that part where I can implement it here at Lightspeed and all of a sudden, you know, get there even quicker. Cause personally, you know, I'm fairly smart guy. I would rather have, you know, 10% of a billion, right? Than 100% of a million. So if the
10%
whole
of the watermelon, right, as opposed to 100% of a grape. I mean, that is the truth.
Yeah, like, but I've never given anybody here at Lightspeed any ownership that didn't buy it, and maybe that's why I'm not already a billion-dollar company, because I have a technology that's amazing, and I think it should be multiple billions already. And you just hit a nerve. I've never given any piece away, and no wonder they leave at five, and no wonder I can't get them to care like I do. Well, maybe I give them a piece, but my question is, how big a piece? How does the vesting work to where I don't get, you know, screwed?
Yeah. So 25% of their ownership should fall off a cliff at a year. You can choose a year or 2 years, up to you. And then the rest should roll out monthly over the rest of a 3-year cycle. And I think for me, I always had an idea that they should make several multiples of what their salary is. So they're playing for this one big, like, defining payout. When I sold my first business, Slate, you know what? It's a little sad. Like, on the one hand, you've done what you set out to do. But on the other hand, I knew everyone was going to look around and be like, damn, this ride is over. because we really enjoyed it together. And so I thought, how am I going to communicate this? I printed out slate books, like fake Monopoly money, and I overnighted it to everybody in the company because most of my people were salespeople, not outside of the home office. We got on a phone call at noon. I said, open your envelopes. That's how much money you're putting in the bank. And I have a woman who still works for me three companies later to this day, Gloria Rodriguez. And Glo calls me hysterical. She's crying. And I'm anticipating she's sad it's over. So I said, oh, Glo, it's, you know, this is what we set out to do. We're going to do something together again. Don't worry. And she said, nope. I can pay off my parents' mortgage. That moment means so much more to me than getting to $1 billion exit. That's so much more important.
That's what makes it all worthwhile. That will be
the most important thing you do.
Her name's, you call her Glo?
I call her Glo Bug.
I was going to say, when you were saying, you know, when it was over, most people would be like, what's the next one? Cindy, what's the next one?
Yeah.
And now you've got a team that can go, you know, I love the idea. I'm going to strongly consider that. Now, as you know, the Bomb Squad is listening, and the Bomb Squad is filled with all kinds of people. There's people struggling. There's freaking people killing it. Like you said, you listen. I didn't know freaking Billies were listening to this, but, for the non-Billies,
you and Jesse Itzler are too fun to not listen to, by the way.
Oh, Itzler's the best. So for the non-Billies, or people that are just, they're just not prepared. Like, again, I know I'm hitting it one day, or one way or another.
Yeah.
Lightspeed's more than likely the vehicle, but what if you're just out there with a landscaping company, or you're just a business owner, not necessarily software or something that has $1 billion, you know, possibilities. What would you say to them to get their minds in a position that even a landscaping company could be a $1 billion company?
For sure. Why not? Why not you? Why not that idea? And I feel like this is what we fail to do, is we don't map the destination. Like, why shouldn't the destination be huge? You're so clear on where you're going that every day, what I know is you're architecting the map to it. But if you've never defined something big, you're not going to get there, because every day you're not architecting the map to it. And I think that's what it's all about, is declaring what's the biggest goal I could possibly set myself.
You can talk through those, by the way.
Oh, I'm sorry. I stopped. I know. I think that's it. I think it's about, you know, the destination in mind. Begin with the destination in mind. Put your head down. Do the hard work every single day. But if you've declared the destination, every day you're doing the hard work leading to it.
Okay, so here's a question. You set out to be a billionaire?
I set out to do something epic, which was the first ever for women. And I wanted to change the conversation about women and sex forever. If I did that, the money was going to come. And I think I always had that in mind, but the money wasn't the driver. The mission was the driver, the huge get, the huge win. You know, my story is crazy in that my fate was completely controlled by the FDA, who was fighting me on this. So it's not just that I got there with all the science. I got there despite having been turned down twice and having to fight through it. And we had one final moment when the FDA was going to get a recommendation from experts around the country. Should they or should they not approve it? And it's crazy. It plays out almost like you're at the Supreme Court. You're in like this massive room in a government agency, and you're presenting, and the FDA is presenting, the public speaking, and they put the like thing on a literally like a jumbotron. They vote in the room that day. The night before me and my team went into that, I threw a victory party. And the chairman of my board was like, what? Everyone needs to be in bed. We need to be rested. This is the biggest day of our life tomorrow. And I am like, they will walk in that room as champions, because we have done everything we could possibly do to get here. And tomorrow, it's not our decision, it's theirs. And we won. But I think it was a mindset of we were going to be victorious in that.
Well, if you weren't, wouldn't that be gender bias or something? Like how can Viagra was approved? So you're saying, why can't women's Viagra be approved?
Oh, wait, Brad, I'm going to make it even better. So when Viagra was approved in 1998, it was deemed to meet such an important unmet medical need that it was raced to approval in 6 months. My product took 6 years. I had 3 times as many patients worth of data.
That's because a bunch of those lawmakers couldn't get their dicks hard.
Well, you said it. Well, that's, I'm not saying that.
Yeah, but that's
I'm
what just it is.
There is a double standard, I will say to everybody, in medicine. And it's really that if something, and by the way, like you said, for guys, it's mechanical, right? It's hydraulic lift. We can see it. And therefore we accept it. For women, it's brain chemistry issue. But if something goes wrong for a guy, we say, oh, biology. And we go to work to fix it. If something goes wrong for a woman, we go, oh, psychology. Have a bubble bath. Have a glass of wine. It'll all be fine. And that's so dismissive, actually. I mean, it's ridiculous to think, hey, by the way, guys bring psychology into the bedroom too. So we're shortchanging men by not addressing that. But like the notion that men and women alike don't walk into the bedroom with biology at play is ridiculous. And so for me, it was always so obvious. But I was up against not only regulatory environment, but a societal narrative. You can't even imagine. I used to get death threats to my house for doing this.
Why?
I dared to press the pleasure button.
Who doesn't want a bunch of horny women running around the planet?
Oh, a lot of people.
No, none. And if they do, they need to be voted off the island.
They are off the island. Yeah.
What if a guy
fair and square on science and maybe change their minds?
What if a guy takes Addy?
It's not indicated. And
you've done it though. I know you've done it. I know you've tested that. What happens when a dude takes it?
We have a study underway at Baylor right now. So I'm going to come back on and we're going to talk about it.
Yeah. Cause I would imagine if the pill does nothing mechanically, you know, like lubed up or anything like, you know, what do you call that? You know, friction, lubrication of arousal. Whatever.
Lubrication.
Yeah. Yes. In other words, if there's nothing wrong down there with that, it's just all up here. Well, then the pill affects, you know, neurons and dopamine and all the things that are happening in here.
Yep.
Okay. So if that's the case, well, then the pill should probably work on men too. Because there's men out there that don't feel like it either. I mean, dude, I wish I could run around and say I'm one of them horn dogs and all I think about is humping all the time. I don't. Like when you grow up in an ice cream shop, you know, it's not necessarily, you know, you don't run because there's ice cream anymore. But at the end of the day, there's a lot of dudes out there that don't feel like it either. Now, a Viagra just makes it work. It doesn't fix the problem.
It doesn't. It's actually, the analogy is like oil and gas for a car, right? There's many guys who are taking a Viagra thinking it's going to turn on desire. And you know what? If you don't want it, the Viagra doesn't work.
That's well, you're sitting there with some wood, but you don't feel like doing anything with it. And let me tell you something, by the way. Hey, from a marketing perspective, I got to give it to Pfizer or whoever they hired, whatever agency, because when they say, this is marketing, folks, when they say, if your erection lasts longer than 4 hours, get medical attention. That is a marketing ploy because every dude in the world is like, yes, I want my erection to last 4 hours.
Yeah.
What's that in a woman's version?
We don't get any of those kind of fun things. We don't get to throw like footballs through tires. Like just think about that for a second. For 20 years, you have not turned on the TV, turned on the radio, watched a Super Bowl ad, and not been told, to your point, that like sexual satisfaction is really important. The subtext of that is if you're a man. And we're not even conscious. Like it actually does fuel like our women's insecurity and bringing it up, thinking that something's just wrong with them. And so I don't know that we have the same kind of thing we're getting away with in the way that they have. It's been a very different standard, I think, for us than the male drugs. But, We're getting there. So I'll have to tell you when we finally get our ads out there. We're mostly doing radio and podcast ads right now.
What would you recommend a guy asks his wife or girlfriend to see if they are? Do women hide this fact?
Yes, for sure. Like I'm saying, again, the profile is not like we're in a crappy relationship and, you know, I don't want to have sex with you because you didn't empty the dishwasher. Like that's not, that's relationship dynamic. These are women who are like, you know what? I love my partner, but something like the light bulb, the switch went out. I used to want to do it. And now I like actually never think about it. And I really do think that it happens a lot. And to protect their partner who they care about, they would never say it. And because we don't talk about it openly, and because even OBGYNs don't ask us this question most of the time, like it's crazy that we sit in isolation like, oh, it's just me. This is just happening to me. And yet it's happening to millions of women. So I hope that I'll open up that conversation and just have an honest one about sex.
Well, teach us how to have the conversation. Like I want to go home right now. I want to go home right now and ask questions, but I don't want to walk home and say, you faking it? You know, because
this is the best way for everybody who's listening, any guy that's listening to me who wants to bring this up in like a, to your point, non-accusatory or non-confrontational way. I just heard the craziest thing today. Like I didn't realize that there was finally a pink pill for women and that there hadn't been for all these years, even though there have been so many options for guys. Like, have you ever felt like you didn't really want it? Like, do you think about it? Do you still fantasize? Like, how's the experience for you?
And what if they say because no?
If they say like, oh, I mean, look, I think I can probably play this out from the woman's side where they're going to say, oh no, honey. I mean, not all the time, of course, but we're busy and the kids and the that and this. And I think then you just let them, you say, well, you know what? It's just cool that you have an option now. And so I want you to enjoy it as much as I'm enjoying it.
So you're encouraging just the plant the seed approach.
Yeah, I think that's right. Because look, none of us want to feel broken in any way. And I think women take it that way. They feel very responsible for it.
Yeah, but there's a pill. Like again, I mean, I know. ADDYI.com, Addy.com. All these dudes right now are writing that down. Go get your girl the pill. Do you have to have a prescription, I assume?
You do. Yes.
Okay, so that's another dumb thing. Like, but whatever. So now doctors, call your teledoctors, haven't been feeling it, and tell them you want prescribed ADDYI, right. Addy. Is that its name?
Right on Addy.com. You can actually speak to a doctor licensed in your state for $19 and figure out if it's right for you. And I should say again, it's not right for everybody.
It's right for everybody.
You know, it has risks and benefits. You gotta make sure it's right for you. But yeah, you can find out literally by talking to a doctor and having it, if it's right, delivered to your doorstep.
Hey, I'm gonna get my girl on it and I'm gonna take it because I'll bet you anything it gets us both loopy. Will a doctor prescribe it to a man?
Doctors can prescribe medications for anything that they would like. So they have complete latitude off label. I have to say it's not indicated for that. But doctors have the ability to do that. Obviously insurance wouldn't cover it either when it's not approved for that.
What does insurance cover anymore? Hey, so yeah. The reason I say that is because I'm interested. It's intriguing that your pill works on the mind. Viagra, it doesn't fix you psychologically. It fixes you biologically. It gets the blood flowing and it opens up capillaries and it does what it does, yep. Right?
Yes.
So right. Like you don't even have to be in the mood and, you know, there it goes. From a Addy perspective, the pink pill, it's working on the mind. It's releasing some sort of like what? Serotonins, endorphins, dopamines.
It's getting that balance of dopamine and serotonin to exactly kind of the right place for us to respond to sexual cues.
So
dopamine and serotonin are this. Dopamine is excitement. Serotonin is inhibition. So if I now lift a little bit of the inhibition, make you more excited, you respond.
I want to take it. It's weird. It's like,
can I tell you how it was discovered? So do you know that Viagra was discovered as a blood pressure med? cardiovascular medication that had this incredible side effect of directed blood flow. Addy, years ago, when it was first being studied, you know, because it works on these neurochemicals, it was being looked at around like mood, like the, almost like the antidepressants. Antidepressants, what's their number one side effect? They kill your sex drive. And so much so that you actually have to administer a scale in clinical trials to say, like, how much have I killed your sex drive? With Addy in the early trials, all the scores went the other way. So it's the only one of its kind and the only one with a pro-sexual effect.
So how did you think of it? Like, in other words, I'm looking at you, listening to you, and every time I talk to guests, whether they're, you know, massively successful or you know, crashing and burning, I always think back and, like, first of all, their family, like, what, you know, your mom and dad and where you lived and how'd that look? And then boom, high school years, how'd that look? And then, you know, high school to, you know, 30 is a phase, like, how'd that look, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm just, when I'm talking to you, I'm thinking, like, are you a chemist or, like, did you just tell a group of chemists to, hey, we're finding the solution to this. Everyone go to work until we do.
So I'm a business person. Totally. I'm a geek at heart of loving science. But I've always been surrounded by spectacular scientific teams. And I think the magic of that combination is I see the commercial potential and they are the geniuses in the lab. And sometimes the geniuses in labs never look up and figure out which one has commercial potential. So that, you know, was the harmony. I mean, my background is, I told you, blue collar kid, great family, supportive family, but family who thought you had to earn everything in life, and I'm glad that they did. Made me very independent. They also moved me every year. my dad has maybe a wicked sense of humor. He came home when I was in the fourth grade, and he said, "Do you want to go to Fiji?" And I was like, "What's Fiji? Like, I've never heard of this before. This is before Fiji water and, like, now our version of Fiji." And I ran into, like, our living room and spun the globe, and I saw it was the other side of the world. And I said, "Yeah, I want to go to Fiji." He goes, "Great, because we're moving there." And then every year from the fourth grade through my senior year of high school, I moved. And I think that while as a child that felt so, you know, hard because you'd finally get friends and then you were, you know, uprooted again, it was my absolute conditioning for everything that I've done later in life, which is I got really comfortable being uncomfortable.
What's the best spot on earth you've been to?
Fiji.
So Fiji is where, like, if you can, I always pause because it, like, sounds stupid when I say, if you could vacation anywhere, because technically you can. So where would you go if you could vacation anywhere?
I'd go to Fiji, and it's because it's my childhood, right? So I'm very nostalgic. And actually, I think about a lot of even Americans, if we get to have a dream trip and we go to Hawaii, like, if you go just that much further, you'd be in this country that's so unspoiled. You know, it's not American, and it's the people are the kindest, biggest hearted people you'll ever meet in your life.
What language?
And there's something so unspoiled about it. English. And Fijian is their native language, but English is spoken everywhere.
Wow. Yeah. Is it dangerous? How come everyone doesn't go to Fiji? Is it like forever and a day to get there?
Yeah, because it's so damn far, because it's the other side of the world. So almost, you know, closer to, it's really like Australia's Caribbean to ours, you know, for East Coasters. Like, it's very, you know, it's the other side of the world, and it's a very long trip. But it is so worth it. I went back. So listen to this story. I left there. I was probably 11 years old when I left Fiji. I went back when I was 30 to have like the 5-star Fiji experience, because there's a lot of beautiful resorts there too. So I was going back a different way, and I landed in their airport, and a woman says, "Cindy." And I turned around like, "Wow, hey." And she's like, "We went to school together." And I said, "Do I not look any different?" And she's like, "You're still the palest girl I've ever seen." Because I had this wonderful experience going to a Fijian school when I got there. And again, like, those experiences I look back on, I wouldn't trade for the world.
So were your parents weren't rich, were they?
State Department. So yeah, no.
So working for the government. So you were traveling all the time. After you got out of high school, at what point were you starting to get into the pharmaceutical world?
Okay, so I got back to the U.S. my senior year of high school, and my single criteria is I'm not moving. So I went to school in the D.C. area, which is where we had moved back to, and I was fortunate enough to have this great business teacher who knew, like, my weirdness is that I've always loved, like, what makes one business exceptional versus another? Culture. What is it? And so she would always give me these extra assignments. I had to, like, come and report back to her about the business I had just learned about. And in this process, I decided I was going to go work for Fortune's Most Admired Company. That was it. That was my single criteria. If I go learn from the best, I can take it anywhere. And at the time, it happened to be Merck. It could have been anyone, right? It could have been an airline. It could have been an oil company. At the time, it was one of the big pharmaceutical companies, Merck. And when I got out of school, I applied. They weren't hiring. So I had to go work another sales job for 7 months. And then they were hiring. And I applied. I got the job. I called that professor. And I was like, I told you I was going to do it. She said, great, we're going out to dinner and you're buying. So that was my first work experience.
And so that's where you got the pharmaceutical experience. And then at some point, did you just think, man, there should be a freaking pill for women? And then you told, and then you said, I'm going to start my own company because Merck didn't want to do it. Pfizer didn't want to do it. Nobody's doing it. You're like, how is this even possible? Because in my mind, that's what I'm thinking. Like, how did nobody think of this? First of all, second of all, you're in the pharmaceutical world, but the people that actually make the drug, aren't those like scientists and chemists and doctors?
Yeah, for sure. So my story is I go to Merck, big company, totally great company to learn from. Like, no chance I'm going to be employee 4,478 and nobody ever listened to my great ideas. So I thought, okay, I don't work in a big environment. My brother's in a .com. He's about to go in this thing called a startup that I've never heard of before. He's about to take it public. I watch what happens for him. Like, what does this mean? You have equity. And I'm like, the hell with this. I am going to a place where I get equity. So I go to smaller companies. And frankly, I learned from, you know, great entrepreneurs until I decided I could do it myself. And then I started the first time with one of the male sexual health drugs. And that's when I get a beat on this science for women. And I am like selling off my profitable business in men. I'm going back to zero and I'm taking this on because this is the $1 billion idea. This is the big one.
Man, it sounds, it's almost like a not a fairy tale, but like unheard of. You know what I mean? Like when you hear about, I think it was Bill Gates. He's working with IBM. He says, hey, I want to do this. We should do this. We should do this. They say basically pound sand. And so he goes and does this and becomes Microsoft. You're sitting there right in the company that could have developed all of it.
Sure. For sure. Absolutely.
They had you within their nest.
Oh yeah. They had the resources.
Gainfully employed. Did you try to tell anyone, or did you just assume they ain't listening to me? So you quit and started your own deal.
they're not listening to me. I'm doing it on my own. They're not ever going to have the conviction. They don't see what I can see.
Did you just assume that, or did you ask?
Oh, well, look, even I'm going to tell you when I had my mail company that I had built from scratch, I told my board I'm selling it off to take this on. And they're like, are you crazy? Like, no shot. And I said, I am doing it. Like, this is what's going to happen. And actually, they all came along with me for the ride, but not without at the beginning, like, questioning it. Like, what? No chance. I mean, I think, look, what's that great expression? They say it's impossible until it's done.
Yeah.
And that's if you're ever going to do something, you're paving a whole new path or doing something completely different. No one is going to tell you like, yes, easily at the beginning. So you've got to stick to your guns. You have to believe it to your core.
Cindy, if people are following you, man, do you drop these nuggets left and right all over your social media? I know you have a book coming out. What's up with the book?
Yes. Oh, that's that's probably not in this year, but maybe next year. Yeah. And it's really my principles, the big O, ownership. Like, I want to talk to people about how do you construct it in a way that you get to the highest level of success. And look, for all of your people who are listening, you've said this a couple times, a lot of them are going through tons of hardship. More things have gone wrong for me than right. That's the truth. That's the truth of life.
Say that again.
More things are not going to go your way than they're going to go your way. But the real difference, I think, is, and I think a long time ago, the way I define failure is not trying.
Boom.
If you're not trying, you're failing. But otherwise, you know what? You're getting up and giving it your best shot. That's success.
Now, what's Pinkubator?
My Pinkubator. So now, to your exactly what you said you want to do. So I had this exit. Oh my gosh, what am I going to do? It's very clear to me. I'm going to get other people like me, underdogs, overlooked, laughed at, big ideas, crazy ideas by most people's standards. I'm going to help them get there. And so I bet on these massive disruptive firsts and often things that, you know, precipitate some interesting conversations.
Well, I mean, you have a website called pinkubator.com, don't you?
I do. Like, yeah. So
like,
you can,
do you get like a million applications, a million inquiries?
Tons. Yes. And I'll tell you, for everyone listening, I can help you when it is like a disruptive first in health and wellness. If it's a fashion product, if it's a whatever, I'm not your best person. I will happily send you to somebody who I think is better,
but
I will mentor a lot of those women.
But would you invest?
No, I really invest in, I'm taking these crazy swings at these, for example, the first flushable pregnancy test, we just brought it to market. It's the only eco test. It's no plastic. And by the way, it's also discreet. If a woman tests at work and she doesn't want to leave it in her waste paper basket. I've got a woman who's changing the spinal tap. She's created a heat map for the back for how you would put a spinal tap in. Super cool. I have a technology that, with a dip of my finger in a drink, it tells me if there's a date rape drug in that drink in 30 seconds. I like a very specific kind of opportunity. And then I give them access to my team to help them get to launch.
Man, folks, I told you I had a treat today. This episode could literally launch the next big thing with Cindy Eckert and you, the listener. But you have to have the balls to call, joke intended, because she really looks to help women. But you said you would help a dude if they had a good idea.
Absolutely. I've got two guys that have a prevention thing in Alzheimer's that is out of this world. I mean, yeah, I help. Let me define that differently. Not male, female, underdog. I help the me of before. I help the people who are being overlooked.
See, that's awesome. That's what makes good people, in my opinion. I mean, you could have got a bunch of money, ran around, freaking living life, basically stingy, but you're turning it around. Pinkubator.com, folks, plus at Cindy Pink CEO. Where else can they follow you?
ThePinkCeiling.com. You can pitch us. And or the Pinkubator, they both go to the same site, so you can pitch us there. And then, my God, what do you mean? They can follow me in your room on Clubhouse, because certainly we're going to do that again.
Oh yeah, come to Clubhouse. You know, I haven't been on Clubhouse for a while. I have real businesses to run. Some people are in there all day, every day. I can't figure out how they're doing it.
Me too. I always have that question. We have 11 companies in the Pinkubator right now. So I work on all of those. I work on Addy again, that has been returned back to me. And so Clubhouse is like, if I'm willing to work West Coast hours, even though I'm an East Coaster.
Hey, plus if you're smart and you want to save a relationship, because if your girl's not telling you that she doesn't really feel like it, but she's just, you know, doing it anyway, I bet you that wears out after a while. Yeah. I'll bet you anything, a lot of marriages could get saved by simply suggesting that that you send her to Addy, ADDYI.com.
This is not like, oh my God, I popped a pill. There's the hot guy. Let's go home. That's not how this works. I mean, I have so many funny questions over the years about that. This is about like restoring you to a normal you once knew. Like, let me give a parallel. if somebody was depressed and I gave them an antidepressant, I'm not trying to make them euphoric, right? I'm getting them back to a normal they once knew and they were happy with. Their younger self, maybe in this case, whatever it was, when their drive was at a place where they were happy and they're not frustrated by how it has changed. So that's really the truth of it. It's not like an instant gratification. Women are not on demand when it comes to sex, but that's not a surprise to anybody listening.
No, but it did kind of just ruin things a little bit for me.
It did? Oh my gosh, you're so funny.
Yeah, I thought like I could go home and say, babe, you know, if you take that pill, you're instantly going to want to start doing it. And that would be cool.
Think about things that women take, like birth control. You don't take birth control once. Like there are things in your system, I'll give the male parallel, Cialis. Think about that. It changed from like popping a pill to taking it daily so that it was like when the moment is right, so that there's still spontaneity in sex as opposed to like, hey, hold on one second. Let me go take a pill. Let me give it a little bit of time to work and I'll meet you in the bedroom later. I don't know that anybody wants that in sex life.
That dulls it down. You just want to be able to knock it out. Like in an elevator, that's the problem. Like if some dudes wanted to do it in an elevator, they don't have an option.
Yeah.
It takes too long. So, okay, I get it. So it's just going
to, you're now getting to a baseline where like, yeah, if you're in that elevator and the mood strikes, you're good.
Well, I still think everyone should go do it, even though it's not instant. You're not getting her fixed today, but how long does it take before she starts becoming?
So 4 weeks, we say to give it until you really feel effect, really 8 weeks to feel full. The effect's going to continue to like climb if you're a responder to it. Not everybody's going to respond.
Well, will you do me a favor and come back when your book drops so we can promote it? And I get a second interview where I can ask you a bunch more questions.
That'd be amazing. I'd love that, Brad.
Well, I appreciate it, folks.
This group knows instant gratification, no such thing, not an entrepreneurship either.
Yeah, well.
Got to fight the good fight.
Yeah, but it's nice to dream, isn't it?
It is. That's right. Two things. So we're going to either come back after your experiment is done, when I do the book, or when you sell it for $1 billion. And I hope that's the one that comes first.
Hey, that's what I'm hoping. You know, I've got probably a little bit of ways to go, but I can tell you this. There is no shortage of dreaming in my book. Do you still like have big visions, or are you like, financially I'm done, I just want to go help people?
I have a big vision. I'm going to make women really rich, and I'm going to create $1 billion worth of wealth for other women.
And believe it or not, when people are listening, like, come on, Cindy, that's bullshit. I'm telling you, I'm at the same level, but at a different level. In other words, at some point I quit worrying about me. Like I'm comfortable. I have enough. Right. I'm literally, my mission when I wake up is not to make money. It's to get the knowledge from the people who have it, like you, to the people who need it. Cause there's people out there, they're not comfortable. They're struggling their asses off. And someone like you has the information they need to win, but there's no transference of knowledge. So I said to myself one day, I'm going to get the knowledge from the people who have it to the people who need it. And that's why I started this podcast. That's why I started my training company. And that's why I freaking get up every day. It has nothing to do with money. However, I do have a goal, and that's to reach a Billy. So if you guys can help me do that, then do that. Share this podcast out. Let everybody hear Cindy Eckert. Everybody, if you guys want to repay me for all my badass podcast episodes, because I get tons of you saying it's changing lives, then pay me back by going and following Cindy right now at Cindy Pink. Make sure she knows coming on here was worth something. And until next time, keep it real.
Dropping Bombs with The Real Brad Lee. Subscribe at droppingbombs.com.